You're listening to the Great Coaches Podcast.
Hi everyone, Paul here, and just a quick message from me to let you know that if you are looking to improve the performance of your team, no matter whether it is a work, sporting or community one, then we've developed some tools to help. On the website, you will find our Thriving Teams Diagnostic, which uses insights from the more than 200 great coaches we have interviewed to challenge you with a series of questions to help you understand how your team is performing. It's free and only takes a few minutes to complete. If you'd like to know more, you can check out our website, thegreatcoachespodcast.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to the Great Coaches Podcast.
To me, being perfect is not about that scoreboard out there.
This is a chance of a lifetime.
When you can understand the person, you can then work towards a common goal.
We are all on the same team.
Know your role and do it to the best of your ability.
Focus on the fundamentals that we've gone over time and time again.
Your defense has got to be better.
Leave no doubt tonight.
Great moments are born from great opportunity.
Hello, my name is Paul Barnett, and you are listening to the Great Coaches Podcast, where we believe that there is no algorithm for leadership. And so we interview great sports coaches from around the world to try and find ideas to help all of us be better leaders. Our great coach on this episode is Liam Sheedy. Liam is a former Irish hurling player and now coach. Liam played 13 senior games with Tipperary over 10 years. He retired in 1999 and in 2002 began coaching Tipperary youth teams. In 2007, he was appointed senior coach, and in 2010, he led the team to their 26th All-Ireland victory. Liam then took a break from coaching at the highest level to spend more time with his family, as well as to coach local teams. In 2018, he returned to coach Tipperary, and in his second year back, he won the All-Ireland again. Liam has a great spirit and is a wonderful storyteller. And some of the highlights from me from the interview were his challenge on whether you focus on the setback or the bounce back, and how this idea flows through his story and the championship teams he has led. His belief that a perfect day is when you give to somebody who might never be able to repay it, and his focus as a leader on creating an environment where the person gets to flourish, and how the great coaches are innovators and focused on creativity so that they can get to the future before anybody else. And just before we go to the interview, today's podcast is brought to you by the Macquarie University Business School's MBA program. Designed to empower, challenge and transform, the Macquarie MBA gives you the business skills and knowledge you need to succeed in an evolving global economy. The program bridges the gap between theory and real-world application, bringing together world-leading professors, executives and industry partners to teach you how business can be used for good. I have just started working with the team at Macquarie on some projects and can attest to the quality of the people and material. To find out more, search for Macquarie University Business School's MBA. And now, please enjoy our interview with Liam Sheedy.
You're listening to the Great Coaches Podcast.
Liam Sheedy, good evening. And welcome, after all these years of chasing you, to the Great Coaches Podcast.
Well, I'm delighted to be on, Paul. Yeah, it's a privilege to be on here. And yeah, as you said, it's probably long overdue at this stage, to be fair to you.
Well, Billy Walsh was the person who I got your name from, and I interviewed Billy almost 2 years ago. So it's great to finally have you here, Liam. But let's start with something simple. Where are you in the world and what have you been up to so far today?
Well, I'm here in Tipperary. I have an office here at home. I currently work with Teneo, but we're actually starting our own business, Blue Lake High Performance Partners, so with two of my colleagues from Teneo, Jane Mitchell and Eugene Hogan. So we're starting our new business in January. Had a wonderful 3 years with Teneo. Obviously, we've set up Teneo Performance and Consulting. Really enjoyed my time there. And there's an opportunity now for us to try and create our own identity. We have a location here in the Southwest. And yeah, we're excited about what the future holds. Very thankful to Teneo and all the team there. We have a great relationship with them. We'll continue to be close and work as associates when the time is right for both of us. But yeah, it's an exciting career journey. And as I said, I'm very lucky. I live here in Portreau. It's where my heart is. It's where I've always been living here. And it's a special village that we have here in Portreau. And certainly I'm lucky that, you know, my office in Killaloe is about 20 minutes away. So it's only over the road, and I have my own office here in the house as well. Yeah, so loads going on in the build-up to Christmas.
Liam, you've had first-hand experience with some great coaches. There's people like Eamon O'Shea, Billy Walsh from boxing, and, of course, Michael Ryan. So just to begin, could I ask you, what is it you think the great coaches do differently that sets them apart?
Yeah, great question, Paul. I guess I was lucky between my involvement with Tipperary and all of the teams that I've been involved with throughout my term with Tip, and also getting a chance to sit on the high performance board for Sport Ireland. That was a big opportunity for me to get to see other sports and see other coaches in action. So, as you said, to get to rub shoulders with the likes of Eamon O'Shea and Billy Walsh and others is certainly something that I feel very privileged to have been a part of. And yeah, to me, I think, you know, ultimately they really focus on the person more so than the player. I think that's one of their biggest strengths. And they're able to get inside and really understand, you know, as I said, if you only get to know the player when you've got him in your environment, you're probably only talking about 10 to 15 hours a week, whereas there could be a lot going on in the 168-hour week for people, especially people that are high-performance athletes, and understanding what makes them tick and really getting inside them and getting inside their heads and getting underneath their skin. And, you know, as I suppose the thing about the coaches is they're able to, even in their language and how they speak to players and how they invest in players, and they you know, they have a lot big focus on one-to-one. You know, I mean, if I was to observe the relationship that Eamon O'Shea worked up with Larry Corbett in my time when I was manager, and if I watched the relationship that he built up over three stints that he built up with Seamus Callaghan and how he's able to manage that, like Eamon was he was a genius. And I think the likes of Eamon and Billy, I think they're really strong students of the game. So they're all the time looking to know where is the game going next. And how can they be there before anybody else? So the like creativity and innovation, I think, is a big part of how they operate and how they structure themselves. They're always looking to see where they can find that extra edge or that extra distance. But and there is a requirement from the players to buy in and to go with them. I think that's an important part of it. Like, it, you know, I always say coaching, it's a two-way thing. You know, I often see some of the greatest athletes out there and they talk about being coachable. And that's a really important part of this. You've got to sort of, you know, throw your full self into it. And, you know, that might cause you to be vulnerable at times, but that's okay. And as I said, you know, when I see some of the outcomes that have been generated, but it's not really outcome focused, Paul. It's very much around what's the process and where and how do we get to the how. They have a very strong why as a player in terms of trying to get up those steps. But certainly the how and the process is a big part of what the coaches do. And again, Eamon would be, you know, Eamon was the genius, he was the magic, and I suppose then I'm in the background, it probably suited. We often talk to ourselves about being two sides of the same coin. So, you know, and I didn't be coming after him to say, okay, well, you know, I love the magic, but equally, you know, you got to put the overalls on and you got to work really, really hard. So, you know, that importance of what you're doing when you don't have the ball was a big part of my philosophy and my coaching, I suppose, model. And as I said, it worked really, really well. But just to see what they created with their athletes and their players over many years and their consistency of performance, you know, it must be very pleasing for them. It certainly was incredible for me to observe and to see those relationships building over time where literally players would go anywhere or do anything for their coach.
Well, let's go back to your playing days. You finished in 99, had a long career as a player. And you transitioned into coaching very quickly. It was 2001 and you were the intermediate manager initially. But then in that first year, You win the Munster Championship, and in the second year you lose the All Ireland final, but you to Galway, which is of course nothing to be too upset about, given how strong that team was during that period. But Liam, at what point during your playing career did you know that you wanted to transition into coaching?
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny, I guess, when you're in a small parish. I mean, we have a small community of about 800 people here. So as soon as you're starting to come of age, they're saying, okay, what other job can you do in the club? And obviously, because I had got great exposure in my playing days to some wonderful managers and some wonderful coaches. And also, I would say the environment that I was in here in Portreau very much molded me into the person I was. I had some, like my three older brothers, Jimmy, unfortunately, was no longer with us, and John and Mike, they were all a bit older than me. So they had a big influence on me because when I was young, I was going watching them play. Dad died very young. So, you know, really hurling was a life, a way of life in our house. Our mother always said if you had work to do or if you had a training to go to, you had to go training because you'll get more out of the sport. And how right she was. But you know, people like Jim Madden, Michael Madden, his son now, they run the Jim Madden Leadership Program here through the Gaelic Players Association. Jim had a massive impact on my career. He probably brought me up through the ranks and invested heavily in me. And there's no doubt about it, that played having handsome dividends. And I would also say that, you know, my mother and Jim and all of those people that I was rubbing off here in the parish, they all had the power of giving, and giving was a big part of their life. Giving of their time, giving of their energy, giving of their expertise, you know, and giving you a dressing down if you needed a dressing down. I mean, they didn't shy back from it. It was very open, it was very honest, but it was very impactful. So I always felt that people had given a huge amount to me as a player when I was playing, and I always felt that if I got the opportunity to give something back, that's something that would certainly entice me. As I said, my mother always told me that, you know, a day is not a perfect day unless you can give to somebody else that might be never able to repay it. So giving is a big part of it. And you know, to get a chance to work with the players in your own club, as I said, like whether you're managing the under-8s here in your own village or whether you're managing TIP, it's a privilege, and you're going to have either a positive or negative impact on everybody that comes into your environment. And my goal all of the time, while it doesn't always work out, my outset all the time is, how can I make this player better? How can I create an environment where this player gets to flourish? So I love that. I was doing some coaching with divisional teams when I was still with TIP, and we had success there where we won Munster championships. And then quite quickly after I retiring, I managed Ballina, which is the club just in the road from me. We won the league title in 2000 in intermediate. So that was my first step into the arena. And all of a sudden then it happened quite quickly. And I moved on. As I said, I got promoted into the Tipperary job, at the intermediates. And as you know, we had the Munster success, and we came up short in the All-Ireland final after a replay against a really good Galway team. But you know, as you said, unfortunately, in sport, there's going to be a lot of lows, and it's about your ability, I think, to deal with those. But I was probably catapulted quite quickly then into the senior setup. I was interviewed for the senior job in 2002. Obviously, Nicky had finished up, and Michael Doyle ended up getting the job, and I was asked to go in as a selector. And they asked me to know would I do the selector on the senior team and manage the under 21 team. And like I was working in Bank of Ireland. I had a very, very busy job. I was only after starting in the bank in 2002 after 10 years in Procter and Gamble. So I said, no, I definitely won't be able to do the two, but I suppose I was anxious to do the senior job and play the role, even though I had worked with some of those players as a player myself. But I felt I would be able to carry enough weight in the dressing room, and I knew what I was about. And I felt I was ready. But looking back, it might have been a bit soon for me, Paul, but I got a chance. We went in, lost a league final to an absolutely cracker of a league final in 2003 to Kilkenny, and we were beaten in Munster, and we ended up getting back into the All-Ireland semi-final through the back door. We had a wonderful win against Galway up in Galway by a point, and we found ourselves back in the All-Ireland semi-final. And with 50 minutes gone, we were 1 point up against Galway or against Kilkenny, and we ended up getting a bad beating. So they got a goal. It probably went in. It looked like it was going into the net about three times, and eventually went in the fourth time. And I think that was a real killer blow to the group. And we faded, and they beat us comprehensively. And you know, amazingly, I found myself turfed and out of a job. We were surplus to requirements, and we were relieved of our duties in the winter of 2003. It was a very tough time because we only had the 1 year. But as I said, you know, sometimes, do you focus on the setback or do you focus on the bounce back? And it probably was one of the biggest learnings I always had in life, is that you know, my mother did always say, listen, you got to dust yourself down and you got to go again. And probably that was the moment where I really had to dig deep into my resilience and into my reserve and say, okay, what do you want the future to hold? Is that it now, or is there a comeback in you? And thankfully, as I said, we did manage to come back, and the rest of the day is history.
You did come back, because in 2005, you come back to tip the minor team coach. More success follows. There's that All-Ireland win in your second year. Now, if my stats are right, it's tips first since 1996. So that must have felt like a pretty good achievement given the roller coaster you'd been on.
Yeah, it was a really good achievement. And again, you know, it was quite surprising actually. In early 2005, Donny Shanahan, who was a selector on the minor team when I was minor in 1987, would you believe? He had been propelled into he was the chairman of the county board, and he popped into Bank of Ireland and Nina, and he said, Liam, he said, the intermediate job is going again. He said, would you consider going back in? Because obviously I'd left the intermediate job to step up to the senior role. And I thought about it, and I went back and I said, Donny, listen, I said, I've done that. I said, you know, I've been there already. But I said, I'll tell you what, I said, if the minor role was available, I'd certainly be up for having a cut off it. I said, I think I could do something with some of the younger talent coming through, because I was still very tapped into the development squads within the county. So fairness to Donny, he took a chance on me and he gave me the job. I put a great team around me, good group of lads. And we thought we had a real chance in the first year, but we probably were overcooked. There's an awful lot going on at underage. I really got an understanding of load and managing load. Amazingly, we were knocked out in the Munster semi-final in 2005, and we won the All-Ireland in 2006, and I'd done less training sessions in 2006 than I did in the build-up to the Munster semi-final. So these guys, when you were a minor at that stage, you were playing on your club senior team, you were schools teams, you had an awful lot going on. So we really started to understand what the load was. Timed it really well. We lost to a great Cork team in the Munster final. And as I said, thankfully, there was a back door. Only for the back door here in Ireland. The back door, just to explain to your listeners, that's where you get a second chance. So if you lose your provincial final, you still get a chance to go back into the All-Ireland series. And we had a wonderful win against Kilkenny in the... We beat Carlow in the quarterfinal. We beat Kilkenny in the All-Ireland semi-final. That was our first time in 30 years to beat Kilkenny at minor level. So that was a big, big moment for us. And obviously, we had Joe Canning chasing his four in a row in the All-Ireland final for minor medals. And we managed to turn him over on the day. A young Padraig Maher went out and played full back. And I had moved Brendan Maher, who turned out to be one of the stalwarts, back in cornerback. And Michael Callow was in the other corner. And they just... We heard up a real storm. We gave a really good display of hurling on that day, and we were well the better team. And I suppose from that, really, they were the team that created the platform for the senior teams that have been met up in Tipperary over the last 15 years. They've been really, you know, some of the best players we've ever produced have come through that minor team of 2006. And yeah, I was just lucky. And I guess, you know, when you win a minor All Ireland, it was played before the senior game, so there's 80,000 people there. There's a big deal. And it probably gave me a shop window as well for myself and what I could become. And as I said, thankfully it provided me an opportunity to get an interview again for the senior job when it came up in 2008.
Just before we get to that senior role in 2008, people listening might not know that in Ireland, if in the GAA, it's amateur, so you don't get paid. So a lot of coaches and players still work. And of course, you've had some pretty senior positions. In fact, I was reading an article after a speech you'd given about your leadership style as a coach and in business being very much the same, as you say, and here's the quote, it's about lighting a fire inside people and inspiring a team-based culture. You also talked about the fact that you're a Procter & Gamble, another great blue-chip company. But Liam, what have you figured out over the arc of your career? What have you figured out about the components of a team-based culture that are so important?
Yeah, well, and I think back to the first part of your question around lighting a fire inside people. You know, I think that's important. You know, if you're consistently lighting the fire underneath them, they get fairly sick of you reasonably quickly. So you got to see what makes them tick. And I put a huge amount of emphasis on the one-to-one engagement. You know, the insights that I get from one-to-ones with my players, where myself and my management team sit across, we've all, and I always find, like, in leadership, you ask great questions. you'll get great answers. And I will put a lot of thought and a lot of energy into what's the right question. And I suppose I'm very clear in terms of what the outcome I'm looking for. I want the player walking out the door 20, 25 minutes later, no one saying, Liam Sheedy and that management team still believe in me. I have clarity now exactly where I stand and what's where I stand, whether it's in terms of my physical preparation, in terms of my work ethic, in terms of my mental preparation, and in terms of my overall skill level, so that they're clear that they have a plan to go after and what they're going to focus on individually. And it just gives, I love that one-to-one interaction. As I said, it's something I use. It's one of the most powerful tools, I think, is asking great questions, really being prepared for your one-to-one. Because if you light the fire inside everyone and everybody's bringing their best to the training pitch, oh my God, like the environment that creates. And look, you know, to me, culture is everything. You know, I know not, there's all the arguments about culture, strategy for breakfast. But to me, like, if you don't have the culture right, you have no chance of getting to be in a peak performance team. And you simply won't be able to sustain it on a consistent level. You might get peaks and troughs, but I don't think it's to be really that high performance team and have it sustainable over time. I think you absolutely have to go after culture. I know culture, as I said, you know, probably even more important nowadays. I mean, you know, it nearly formed itself over time in 2008 when I went back in. I suppose, like, when the lads walked into the dressing room at that stage, you know, this, and I had all their jerseys hanging up, their names were on the back of it, their socks were there, their togs were there. So it was like, and one of the lads said, "Geez, it's like walking into Real Madrid." And I said, "Yeah, no, that's exactly what I want you to be thinking, because I want you to looking at this environment saying, like, with what setup is here, how could I be anything other than in high performance mode? The minute I set foot in the dressing room, I would always be in there. As I said, if we trained at 7:30, I would be in the dressing room at 6:30. So there was no chance of someone walking in the door at 7:20, because standards is a big part of your culture. And it's up to me as the leader to set the bar and raise the bar and standards. But again, in 2018, when I went back in, then, you know, I can still remember that morning in the dressing room. I said, we're going to build a culture. This is our spiritual home here at Simple Stadium. We're going to build a culture, but I said, it's going to be built from the bottom up. So I broke them into the groups. I had all the flip chart paper, and they all came back with, I said, if you were to look at the values that's going to define the culture of this group, what are they? So they came up with 15 in total. It went from trust to sensible enjoyment to world-class standards to, you know, how we communicate and the positivity within the group. So we had all of that mapped out. And again, they said, well, we're going to now break into groups, and they took each word. So they said, what does actual, break down the word trust and what does it mean for this group? So we left, we had a lovely little document that had the 15 values in the front and the breakdown of each of those words in pages 2, 3, and 4 that was just given to each of them, and that sat on the side of their gear bag. So that was the culture we created for 2019. And there's no question about it. They lived that culture, Paul. And as a result, they got to some extremely high levels of performance. And, you know, in the championship, that is, in Munster, you've got to play 4 games in quick succession over 6 weeks. Then you've got to get yourself ready for Munster final, and then you're into the All-Ireland series. So out of the 8 games, we won 7. We had one day where it didn't go so well. But I have no doubt having that culture and that bed and foundation solid really allows you, because one of the lads, I can still remember him in the corner, said, lads, when you were in this Tipperary dressing room, you wear this jersey 24/7. So make sure no matter where you are, your jersey's on underneath you. So there's a level of you know, a respect that you've always got to bring out there in society, because you're representing the brand everywhere you go, not just on a Tuesday and Friday night when you come in here training. So I think having that culture and being able to build it from the bottom up and lead it from the top down, where everybody feels accountable to it, it just creates for a wonderful environment. I'm really, really big on environment. I think if you create the environment, the right environment, and you create conditions to allow people to flourish, they will flourish. And if they flourish, they're getting the best out of themselves. And certainly it's much easier for me as a manager to live with an outcome that isn't the outcome I wanted, if I know that, well, I've done everything I wanted to do. I've created the right culture. We created the right environment. And for one reason or another, it didn't happen for us on the day. But as I said, there's been loads of examples where that setback actually has led us to go and do some wonderful things shortly down the road. But it has to be all built on that team-based culture. Together, everyone achieves more is something I use a lot, because, you know, there's things that I've done in life with people that I could only dream of. I'd never be able to do them on my own. So I really value the input and insights of bringing everybody on board, getting people connected to a common goal and just committing to going there and doing what it takes.
You talked about expectations a lot in that answer, Liam. And back in 07, there's something that you said that caught my attention. So 07, let's just set the scene. 07 turns around. You're unexpectedly appointed head coach of the senior team for the 2008 season. It's a great year. You win the National League and the Munster Championship, beating Cork along the way for the first time since 1923. So it's great. It's a great result. But you lose in the semi-final of the All-Ireland. And after the match, he said, there was a lot of hurt in our dressing room. This time last year, 17th August, was anything but a nice day, and it hurt us, had hurt a lot of us. And what fascinated with me was, you'd had all this success. It would have been very easy for you to say, oh, well, 2 out of 3 is not bad. We missed the third one. But that's not what you said. You actually said there's a lot of hurt. It's like you were almost saying, almost wasn't good enough on this instance. And I imagine that was a very deliberate move on your part. And I'm wondering what advice you have for others on holding the line around those expectations when maybe they've just fallen short and the temptation is to say, oh, well, we tried our best. We'll get them next time.
Yeah, I think, you know, it was a real sucker blow for us on the day, as you said, August 17th. You know, unfortunately, the days, and we all know this, the ones that sit right at the front of your head is where it doesn't go so well. Unfortunately, that's just the way we're programmed. But for me, I mean, it really was, like, we felt we had every box ticked. You know, we hadn't lost the game all year. We played the Munster League. We won that competition. We played the National League. We won that competition, and we won Munster. We went unbeaten in Munster. We'd beaten Cork for the first time in 83 years. So we'd achieved a lot. But I suppose the goal for the group and the ambition we had set out was that we wanted to get into the final. And that was the goal we had set out. Now, obviously, Waterford ended up being soundly beaten by Kilkenny in the final by a very, very large score. But I must say, after the game, you know, the build-up, like, it's really difficult as a player or as a coach or somebody that's involved in it, where the build-up for the All-Ireland final at that time was 3 weeks, and it's all going on around you, and you're there, and your head is spinning, saying, what went wrong? So I actually let the All-Ireland take its course. I went to the county board. I said, you know what? I said, these lads have given me everything. They've won the National League. They've won the Munster Championship. You know, I think, could we get them away in December? Could we take them away for a few days summer? So we went to Lanzarote, and we got away as a group as well at the end of that year. But between then and the break that we got, we sat down and we talked about. I said, okay, so physically we felt we had all the boxes ticked. Skillfully, we were in unbelievable shape. Eamon had him absolutely humming with the hurling. But, you know, so I said, I have to try and understand what went wrong. So I met some of the players and I completed one-to-ones and said, well, you know, thinking back, like, we hadn't won in Croke Park since 2002. And they said, you know, here we were back in Croke Park. And maybe that Croke Park blocker came to the fore, even though we'd all the work done. So I said, okay. So from the shoulders up, we were having doubts. Yes, definitely, because we went back into that stadium. So I said, okay, well, and that's when, obviously, I said, okay, we've got to look at maybe bringing somebody into our setup that can give us a little bit more when it comes to the mindset side of things. I didn't want a psychologist. There was nothing wrong with our heads. I certainly wanted somebody that would tap into the importance of being free and at one with yourself and not carrying any baggage into a stadium like that in Croke Park ever again. So I had a cup of tea with Caroline Currid. Caroline was the performance coach with Tyrone Footballers, who had won in All-Ireland. And she was, so I asked her to do some one-to-ones with some of my players, and I asked her to do a one-to-one with Eamon. So I said, based on the feedback that they give me, I'll then make my mind up as to whether we might consider having you involved. So she did one-to-ones. They went really well. And we brought in Caroline because I felt there was a gap in my setup where I wasn't covering off enough from the shoulders up. And now we had somebody in the group who would have the one-to-ones with the player that was simply focusing on the player. Sometimes when you're the head coach in an organization, like, the last person they'll tell is you, because you pick the team and you get to decide who starts and who doesn't start. So it was an important, and obviously then, you know, I have a great side of me that says, when we do have a setback, how can I use that setback to fuel future performances? And there's no doubt about it. The loss in 2008 was a huge driver to our performance in the All-Ireland semi-final in 2009. You know, we got away and we went to camp. We had spoken openly about how we felt that day. We'd spoken openly about, you know, We had won the Munster Championship again in 2009, so we did back to back, and we went away to Wales for a day, and we sat in the meeting room and said, okay, what is the 90% we want to bank from the Munster Championship, and where are we going to find the next 10%? And as I said, we had an exceptional performance once we settled in Croke Park. And I suppose then Croke Park came from, actually, we transformed Croke Park from being somewhere where we had a fear going in the gate to where there's actually nowhere else we wanted to be. And we always seen that as being our Coliseum. And that, like, you know, in hurling terms, it doesn't get any better than walking out into Croke Park in full stadium, 80,000 people in All Ireland final. And we were lucky that we had a setup that fully embraced that as a playing group, as a management group, as a backroom team. And we loved driving in that bus underneath the stand. We'd have our song lined up that we'd play going in under the stand, and we'd get out and hop out of the bus and take off. And as I said, you know, even though we lost the All-Ireland in 2009, you know, we were a man down late on in the game, and we left everything out there on that pitch. So we felt we really performed to a high level, but unfortunately just came up short. But I've no doubt the hurt of 2009 or 2008 played a big part in the performance of 2009. And we knew coming out of that stadium that day that we were getting closer. You know, we were taking on that Kilkenny had now done four in a row. Everybody was saying, look, you know, the only question is who are they going to beat in the final next year? But we knew leaving that day that we had got so close that if we could get ourselves back in there again, we'd have a really good chance.
And you did. In 2010, you went one better and you won it. But I don't want to ask you about that. What I want to ask you about is the criticism, because you got a lot of criticism during that period. And and of course something happens next, which we'll talk about in a minute. But how did you deal with that criticism? What did you learn through that process that has stayed with you as you've gone on?
Yeah, look, I suppose, you know, everybody has a point of view, Paul. And, you know, I think you got to understand and accept that everybody has a point of view. And I'd never really be concerned around criticism. You know, some people who should know better might have their point of view, and some people who don't know any better will always have a point of view. But if you let that be your, if that's going to dictate your program or dictate your mindset or impact on you in any way, well, then you're giving up energy. I mean, I felt within my setup, there was a huge amount that I had full control over, and I had no real control over what the external voice was saying. But we managed to block out the noise as a circle, and actually we probably used it as fuel. So, you know, my dressing room wall would be fairly painted with some of the commentary that would have been written about us. And the last thing I'd say before we go on the pitch, okay, boys, now is the time. Is what's on that wall right, or are we right? And I said, I'm fully certain that we are right, and we're going to show today why we're right. So let's go out there and do what we're able to do. So I was all the time craving for one percenters that could give us a little bit of an edge. And I felt that the external voice was of a very negative tone. But when we brought it in, we turned it into a positive, because we were of the view that they don't know us. They don't know what this group is capable of, but we do. And now every time we go on that pitch, we get a chance. And look, you know, you would have to say that, like, our performance in Cork in May wasn't good enough. You know, we were soundly beaten by 10 points. And thankfully, at that time, the structure of the championship meant we had 5 weeks to get the recover. I can still remember Horse and Jockey on the Tuesday night, where I went in for the debrief meeting, and we sat down, and I knew coming out of there with the honesty that we got from the room that standards had slipped. We'd taken our eye off the ball. There were probably a group who had got so close the last year, previous year, they wanted to land above in Croke Park and take on Kilkenny again in the All-Ireland final, but it doesn't work like that. You got to take it hurdle by hurdle. So we probably got a bit ahead of ourselves because we had played a challenge match against Dublin 3 weeks previous, and we were unbelievable. So that was a real sobering moment. 3:15 to 14 points down in Páirc Uí Chaoimh. Cork beat us, as I said, resoundingly. But I can remember, I can still remember going into my dressing room after the match, and everybody's down, everybody's looking, and I said it was approximately in 90 days time, somebody's going to be walking up the steps of the Hogan stand picking up that title. I said, that's going to be us. I said, I'm telling you here now, I said, we are going to win it. So I'm a big believer in planning for every eventuality, and I had done my homework prior to going down, and I had said, if it wasn't to work out, I had enough data from the All-Ireland semi-final in 2009, the performance in the 2009 final, our performances throughout the Munster Championship in a way, I knew what the group was capable of, and I knew that we just needed to get back there. And as I said, that focused us. We went into Horse and Jockey, we had to debrief, standards had dropped, it was raw, it was open, there was loads of vulnerability, but we walked out that door saying, okay, now this is it. So we're nothing else matters as, or is going to get in the way of us bringing our performances to the pitch. And slowly but surely we gained momentum. We had a fantastic win against Galway by 1 point in the All-Ireland quarter-final. When we looked at Edinburgh, 2 points down in time just up, and we recovered and won it by a point. Then we went on and we beat Waterford in the semi-final again and set up that wonderful, wonderful game to take on the mighty Kilkenny, who were going for the five in a row. So, yeah, that was a special day.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
It was a special day indeed, and it was also the last day for a while because you stepped back after that. And 2011 to 2018, you juggle corporate life and family life. You do some coaching at junior level as well and some provincial stuff. But it must have been a difficult period, and I know that you've your family are a little bit older now, but at the time it would have been a, it would have been a hard balance. And I'm wondering what advice you give to others now, other leaders, when it comes to trying to find this type of balance.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think, like I suppose I had given 3 years, it's a big commitment. And I was working in Munster, in 2008, 2009, but I was promoted to the head of sales capability in May, 2010, which meant I was now based in Dublin. So that meant that, you know, there were long days. I was coming down, you know, you come down the road from Dublin, you know, you get down to Turles. I'd have to leave Dublin at 4 to get down for 6:30. I finished the training, and I'd be back in the care. I'd probably leave Turles about 11 p.m. back in Dublin for about 1:30, into bed, and the clock's off at 6:30 and you're up. And it could be 5:30 if I had to head to Belfast the following morning. So even when we were in Carton House on the Friday, I had to do a sales capability launch in Belfast that morning. So I shot up the road. I had it at 8:30. I was back down when the lads were just finishing their breakfast. So there was a bit of juggling going on. But I think energy is one of, I always talk about energy being my currency. I have a lot of energy. I'm a big believer in the 168-hour week. So like time isn't really a constraint. You know, if I get 5 or 6 hours in the pillow, that's loads for me. But again, I place a big emphasis on my energy and how I show up. And equally, so when I go into Turles on a Tuesday night at 6:30 in for training, I'll be skipping in, I'll be whistling, I'll be singing a tune, and they'll know that, okay, here he's in now. We better be ready. There's no point in showing up half connected here. And also I you know, something I do, and obviously we run a lot of leadership programs here in my day job. But I talk a lot about the importance of making 2 or 3 hours a week for yourself. So you'll find me in Nina there in the gym. I'll go in and do a gym and a swim. I'll do a HIIT session here at home in the office. I'll have it done in 35, 40 minutes. I'll go for a walk with the girls where we walk around town and talk about life and talk about everything and have a bit of a laugh and crack. So I know that the importance of that, if I don't fuel to perform, I ain't going to be able to perform. So energy is my currency. I place big value on making sure I carve out those 2 to 3 hours for myself. But, you know, I love what I do. So, like, the reason, like, I always have the view that Tipperary never felt like a chore to me, Paul. Working in Procter & Gamble in Bank of Ireland or Teneo, because I love what I do and I'm doing what I love. And I think if you can get yourself to a place where you're loving what you do and you're doing what you love, it doesn't really feel like a job. It just feels like something that you're just at one with, and you just go with it and you love it. And I love nothing better. There could often have been tough days in the bank, where you know you might be stuck in talks all days, or things, there was a problem somewhere. But you know, between the drive from Cork up to Turles, I catch that and fired off my head and said that can't come in Turles door with me. And I was good to be able to departmentalize things. So I'll park that there now. That's no point in being inside in the dressing room in Turles. And then we go in, and you never come out of Turles in a bad form, because when you see lads going in and the level, like, again, for your listeners, like, these are guys that are amateurs. They all have day jobs. I have a day job. You know, we're just doing it really for the love of the jersey, the love of the county, the love of the game. It's a fabulous game. And as I said, I was privileged to get the chance to manage the intermediates, the minors, and get two stints at the seniors. And as I said, but I think juggling it is much easier if you're really working hard on how you show up and the energy levels that you bring. You give time to it and you don't take it for granted. And then you love what you do. Because I think if you have all those attributes, it now becomes less about the job or the chore and more about the enjoyment and the fun. And enjoyment and fun is a big thing. Like, it's very hard to laugh and be in bad form at the same time. It's impossible, right? So I'm a big believer that, you know, you gotta go through life with a smile on your face and love it and enjoy every minute of it. And that's how I approach it. And as I said, you know, sometimes people look back on that journey from 2008 to 2010, and it's a wonderful journey, but it's not about the destination or the day you get to the top. It's actually the journey, like the camps that we went on. Like, we used to spend 5 days in Spain in our own area, where we were like as if we were Real Madrid. You know, that was the setup, the structure. We'd train in the morning, we'd do a gym session in the afternoon, we have another pitch session at night, and then we'd have team meetings. But we got to spend days together, which was just, you felt like you were in a high performance environment, and we loved every minute of it. So, you know, the times in Carlton House where you go preparing for big games, the training sessions where it's lashing rain and you're on the bags and but there's just no going back from it. All those things are great memories to have. And, you know, even every November now, the team of 20, so that group from 2008 to 2010, once a year in November, we meet, because the culture, we've created memories that will last us a lifetime. And to get a chance to play a few holes of golf and meet up and talk about the old times and the fun that we had and the journey that we had, they're really special. And as I said, that just was the part of the culture that we created at the time. Because I think the biggest thing about culture is, if you get it right, you'll talk about your time spent there, because you'll have wonderful memories that you can look back on. And thankfully, we get a chance to acknowledge that every November.
Well, you come back, it's not over, because you come back to coach in 2019 and it all happens again. There's another All-Ireland victory. It's your second as the coach. What was different this time, Liam?
Yeah, well, you know, I had 9 years experience of leading teams. I had been appointed to the head of sales and revenue in Bank of Ireland when we were losing a million a day, including Saturdays and Sundays. So that would certainly test your leadership style. You know, we had a big body of work to turn that around. Obviously, then I had since then in 2016, I made the move back down to my own region here in Munster. So I became the provincial director of the Munster region. So that had a remit of, you know, there was 72 branches across the Bank of Ireland network in Munster. There was a business banking team, and it was about 700 people. So that was a great opportunity to work with people. I had to completely transform how we operated. You know, I really went after the culture within the bank. So a lot of what I was doing was very complementary. I always say to people, Paul, I don't have a different set of tools for working in the corporate world or working in the sporting world. I have to use the same tools, because to me, everything I've done in life is all around people. And how do we get people to really be the best version of themselves and tick? And that if they're not being that best version of themselves, that you, at least you do everything possible to try and turn them around. Because I don't think there's any better thrill in life as a leader than getting somebody who maybe is operating at a 3 or a 4 and catching them, turning them, hitting the light switch on and getting them up to a 7 or an 8 where they're now performing. Because My mother always said to me, "Liam Sheedy," she said, "there's nobody going into work that would go in in purpose to do a bad job." And that's something that always stuck with me. Our job as leaders is to try and light that fire inside them and connect them to some bigger purpose as to why they might do it a little bit differently so that they're adding value. Because we'd all like to make a difference in life. And my purpose in life is to make a difference with people. So that's the big thing for me. So I felt I was much better equipped to handle challenges around people and the environment. Now, I was also, you know, there's no criticism. Like I won't say bulletproof, but I was very, very strong in my own belief. I didn't feel I had anything left to prove, even though I felt I had a lot more to accomplish, if you get me. I felt the proving had been done in my previous stint. A lot of people that were passionate about the game came back and asked me to say, "Look, Liam, you know, would you give it a go?" The guy, Michael, who had won the All-Ireland in 16, I asked him for his advice, and he said, "Liam," he said, "you know," and this was a big moment for me. He said, "Liam, go back in there." He says, "There's another one in him," he says, "and you'll bring it home. So that was a big moment because myself and Mike were very close friends and have been for a number of years. We played together. He was a selector with me and he went on to manage to an All-Ireland. So getting that level of backing was important. And then some of the players that I had since 2006, you know, they came on the phone and they said, "Come on, Liam," you know. And I felt I owed them something, Paul, because they had been with me, you know, probably 14 years previously. We started the journey as, and they were only kids. And here they were, they said they wanted to try and grab another one before, you know, as they were getting on in their careers. So when I weighed it all up, I went to Margaret. And listen, you know, I'm very lucky, Paul. Margaret and Aisling, Margaret, my wife, and Aisling and Gemma, the two girls, like, I think they nearly had broader smiles on their face when I said I was going back because, you know, a Sunday with a match is a family day for us. And, you know, the great thing about, you know, no matter whether you lose or whether you win, you know, your family will never judge you. You'll always get that warm embrace after the game. So I said, "Look, here goes. We'll give it a go." But it's great to get the warm embrace then. Like if you take the All-Ireland semi-final in 2019 when we came back from the dead to win it and the All-Ireland final, to be able to go over and catch the girls and lift them over the fence and just give them a warm hug after the game is... there are special moments in you know, and again, it's back to memories. But, you know, I felt I could make a difference. I felt I had something to offer. And obviously, I managed to persuade Eamon O'Shea to come back on board. So I felt and had Dara and Tommy, two wonderful coaches. Dara was on my panel in 2010. Tommy was captain in 1999. Owen Kelly came in and done some work with us. Darren Leeson was doing some goalkeeping coaching later on the year. So I got a really good team of people around it, great backroom team. And we as I said, you know, a lot of people felt it was a risk. I didn't feel I had the proof. I was just going back in and I felt I could offer something. So I said, "If you can offer something, well, then why wouldn't you?"
Liam, volunteering and participating in the communities, it's a big theme in your life. It's an ongoing theme in your life. But could you share a story of how someone else has helped you, particularly in a leadership role when things have been difficult?
Yeah, look, I know I probably always have a close circle of people that I would know would have my back and would always be in my corner, irrespective of the outcome. And I think being able to have that sounding board, I think it's very, very important. So if you take it, like, you know, Declan Kyle would have helped me. You know, I would have, he's somebody that, you know, he wrote a book, a wonderful book called The Green Platform. He's got massive life experiences. Declan is somebody that I would have confided in my early days as manager. Originally, when I got the job, I went to speak to Jack O'Connor. He was managing the Kerry footballers and he had won All-Ireland. And I went and met him and I asked him for 15 minutes in Carra Sabhain, which is 4 hours away. And I managed to get 3 hours out of him. So he gave me a great start in terms of what I could go after. I felt coming out of Kerry that day that I got something that could get me up and running. But one of the people that he was using was Declan Kyle. So there actually was a person that was a friend of mine, but was also a friend of Declan. So we connected. And I suppose he's been very good to me. And, you know, the thing about Declan is you could ring him on the way out of Turles and I could be driving the whole way home for 40 minutes and we'd have talked through it and allowed us to get to a great outcome. And likewise, I suppose two people that have really had an impact first time around, like Caroline on the mindset side, because being able to talk to somebody just one-to-one about what's going on and being able to be open and honest about where you're at, like Caroline Corrid had a really big impact on me across the 2009-2010 season. And then last time around, I'm sure when you were talking to Billy Walsh, I have no doubt he mentioned Gary Keegan and the impact that Gary Keegan had. But Gary was the head of the Institute of Sport and was heading up the high performance unit on the Olympic side. So I got Gary on board as the performance coach in 2019. We had become close friends since my involvement with Sport Ireland Board in 2012. And he came on board and worked with me. And again, Gary has been exceptional for me, both as a sounding board on the corporate side, as well as on the personal side, as well as on the sporting side. So, you know, I think everybody needs to have that circle where, you know, when the going gets tough or when the stuff that you need to work through, to be able to have that sounding board or that person of trust in your corner where you can say, listen, this is the scenario, you know, and being able to use that bounce off them, I think is hugely important. You know, like the harder you get up in the leadership ladder, Paul, the more difficult it is to get honest feedback because everybody is trying to sugarcoat it. Whereas actually what you need is you need it open and honest and you need it genuine. And being able to create that environment where you can have the conversation is really important. And likewise, like myself and Eamon we soldiered together now, like for so many years, we've become very close friends. Again, there's nothing that I couldn't say to Eamon O'Shea that he wouldn't give me a nugget or a view on. So I think it's really important, especially in leadership role, that you have somebody that you can confide in, go to and be able to bounce things off, because life's not a straight line. Leadership's not a straight line. The bus comes off the road, but the better ones and the better leaders, they're able to engage with someone that helps them to get the right frame of mind. Then they engage with the overall group. Then they start putting actions in place because you got to do something different. And then you get back in behind the wheel, get the right people on the bus, get them in the right seats, and off you go on a wonderful journey again. And as I said, that's my experience. You know, if Tipperary were floating on the stock exchange here in Ireland, we would have crashed about six times over my 6 years involved, because it doesn't go right every day. But I'm a big believer in the bounce back. I never focus too much on the setback. When we lost the Munster final, I couldn't really sleep. I was lying awake. We got beaten by 12 points by Limerick. But I'm on my notes on my phone, and I probably had a half page of things I felt I was going to do different the following morning. I went into the gym in Nina, and half the team were there. And I went down to Turles, and this was before 1 o'clock on the night after losing the Munster final. So we quickly moved into the All-Ireland series, and that bounced back, because to me it's 10% of the problem and 90% on the solution. I get very solutions focused. And I'm a big believer that if we have a group of 50, 55 people, if everybody is doing three things better after Munster as we head into the All-Ireland series, now all of a sudden we're doing 150 to 170 things better, getting ready for the All-Ireland series. So that's a big part of my understanding, and all the time trying to find the positive that lets the people know and the team know that I still believe in them, and we can go on and we can finish this journey off. Because the ultimate prize here is the All-Ireland Championship. That's the ultimate prize. That's what people remember. That's what people talk about. And as I said, we wanted to get back into that arena. And when you do, it's just an exceptional place. But, you know, leaders need to understand that the journey is never a straight line. And, you know, you will hit roadblocks. And it's being able to engage and connect with people that will give you open, honest and genuine feedback, I think, is hugely, hugely important, Paul.
Liam, maybe just one last question to finish. I think I know how you're going to answer it, but I'll ask the question anyway. What's the legacy you hope you've left behind you for the players and the staff and the administrators that have been involved in the teams that you've led?
Again, like to me, like legacy is big for me. You know, and you know, we talk. You hear a lot about teams. And to talk about leaving the jersey in a better place, and I absolutely get that. I you know, that's an important part. But I think, you know, a legacy for me is leaving the people that are in the setup in a better place. I don't just want to make better players; I want to make them better people. I can still vividly see the three of my players sitting in the Late Late Show, which is the chat show after we won the All Ireland, and I just looked at the way they carried themselves throughout that interview, and I said, they haven't just become better players, they've also become better people. The way they spoke, the way they carried themselves, the humility of them. We put a big focus on the 168-hour person. I certainly do. You know, I mean, does it go right all the time? Does people fall off the wagon? Of course it does. Is there a few things where I said, God, I've had that again, I do differently? Absolutely there is. But I think the legacy is really positively impacting people, where you've given them an opportunity to really flourish they clearly have a skill. And it's my job to try and make sure that we expose as much of that skill and we polish that diamond that they have when it comes to performance as much as we can. And I give everything to that. I love that, whether it's in work scenarios in corporate world or whether it's in the sporting world. But the legacy for me is leaving people in a better place than when I first met them. And as I said, sometimes you do things for people off the pitch that are even more impactful. And it's way more impactful than even winning All-Irelands. And that's an important part for me too. But the legacy is the people. And again, you know, if someone said to me, like, you know, it means a lot over here in Ireland to win an All-Ireland Championship, and to get to do it twice with two different teams is just unimaginable. When I started off coaching the divisional teams and coaching Ballinan and doing a bit with the Tip into Meath, did I ever think I'd go on the journey? I knew it was a path I always wanted to travel, but I couldn't have envisaged the journey that I would go on. But looking back in it, I really committed to it. I had areas and gaps that I needed to go after, and I went after them. If you said to me, if you could take it all back, and if you were to win the lotto or win two All-Irelands or win one All-Ireland with Tip, I would win one All-Ireland with Tip or two All-Irelands all day long. It just is such a sense of pride. Pride is much bigger than money, and it's something that I was so privileged to be surrounded by great players, great people around me. I always say, if you surround yourself with great people, great things will happen. And the administrators were always very, very helpful in terms of the vision that I was creating for the team. They were happy to buy into that vision as well. And as I said, thankfully, we went on two wonderful journeys. Is there regrets? Of course there is. There's some days where I thought we were across the line and we didn't get across the line. But you know what? That's all part of life. Most teams, if they win half the time, they're lucky. If you have a 50% win rate, you're lucky. So, you know, you need to go into this with your eyes wide open. But the legacy of knowing that you've positively impacted people in the journey to the state where they're doing well on the pitch and off the pitch is something that I'm very proud of. And that's why, as I said, my passion in life right now is to make a difference and to really look to work with people to help them to play and live to their potential, whether that be in business or sport. And that's what I connect to. That's what I love doing. And I must say, you know, I was very lucky. As you rightly pointed out, I was probably third choice to get that job in Tipperary in the winter of 2007. And to have gotten it and to have gone on the journey I've gone on, I'm so delighted to have. It's a privilege to manage people, to work with people, but especially to manage players who are playing at the top of their level for the county that we come from. There was parish involvement with my own club here. And again, you know, bringing that cup back into your own village, into your own community, going up to the hurling field, seeing all the kids getting their pictures taken with it. Like, I mean, they're life-changing moments. And that's the legacy, I think, because those kids now have a vision to say, God, if I want to apply myself up here in this hurling field, could I become one of those players? And we have somebody involved again in the club this year in the inter-county setup. So it's great for the communities as well. And it's nice to be able to bring something back into the village, because this village here in Portrose has given me everything. It's molded me into the person I am today. It's a great village. You know, the people in here are just exceptional, and it's been wonderful, wonderful. And I'm only 54 yet, so who knows what the future might hold.
Who knows, Liam? Who knows? It's been great chatting with you. Thank you for making the time. And not getting too annoyed when I pestered you for all those years, but I'm glad we got time to connect. It's been a great interview, and I wish you all the best for the setting up of Blue Lake High Performance.
Thanks a million, Paul. Great talking to you. All the best.
Hi, everyone. It's Paul here, and you have been listening to our discussion with Liam Sheedy. I hope you enjoyed Liam's fantastic style, his energy, and his storytelling. Some of the key highlights for me were his view on the importance of mentors who can act as a sounding board, as more senior leadership positions often mean that it's harder to get honest feedback from people within the organisation. The way he deals with criticism by reframing it and not allowing it to detract from his energy, and his focus on asking great questions to get great answers, and the time and energy he puts in to asking the right questions. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. And just before we go, if you have any feedback, then please let us know. Just like JB, who said, another great podcast from the great coaches teams, not sure how they put out so much quality week after week. Thanks, JB. If you have any feedback, then please let us know. All the details on how to connect with us are in the show notes or on our website, thegreatcoachespodcast.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.